This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It's shocking to understand how governments are undermining girls' education and effectively closing the door on girls' futures.
That's Adirad Karshinan, who works with the Children's Rights Division at Human Rights Watch, on how some African laws have pushed teen mothers out of school. Details coming up. Also, floods and mudslides kill at least 8 people in Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. In Angola, the opposition party, the National Union for the Total Independence of Angola, or UNITA, is challenging the election results announced yesterday. Angola's Electoral Commission declared the ruling People's Movement for the Liberation of Angola, or MPLA, the winner of last week's national election, giving President João Lourenço a second term in office. The commission said the MPLA, which has retained power for nearly 50 years since independence, had 51.7% of the votes, and the commission said UNITA received 43.95%, its best result ever. From Luanda, journalist Israel Campos updated VOA's Kate Poundarson on the latest political developments.
Following the announcement of the final results from the National Electoral Commission giving a win to the ruling MPLA, UNITA has said, as they have said before, since the first preliminary results were announced, that they do not recognize the results, and they are willing to keep on going to the National Electoral Commission just to present, to formalize their complaint to the final results. Well, UNITA has made a formal complaint before the announcement of the final results, and the document has been widely shared on social media. And now they promise to do again with the final results. It's important to say that it's not only UNITA complaining about the final results. The coalition Casa Fé is also saying that they do not recognize the final results, and they're looking to put out a formal complaint to those as well. So they go back to the National Electoral Commission, they formally present their complaints, and they wait to hear back from the National Electoral Commission. We have received a press release just a few minutes ago saying that the National Electoral Commission would actually meet up today to analyze UNITA's and Casa Fé's complaints and see what they're going to do from there.
Now, is there a certain time frame in which the commission has to make a decision? Is there a process set out in the law or the constitution for this?
The Supreme Court, which is like the electoral court at this minute, has 72 hours to analyze complaints from the political parties after the final results are officially recognized and announced. It's not clear how long the National Electoral Commission themselves have to analyze and to respond to those complaints, but the law is very clear about the timing that political parties have to complain once the results are formalized from the Supreme Court.
Now, I understand that some of the Angolan government partners and observers have made some statements about the announcement of the results. What's going on there?
So we saw yesterday, after the announcement of the final results, a statement from the EU, from the European Union, saying that they have been following the elections here in Angola and that they have seen that the opposition parties have been complaining about the final results. And they obviously urged the authorities to make efforts to address those complaints. So this statement has actually been very impactful here in Angola, because it actually legitimizes what UNITA has been saying. So many people are using this statement to say, well, this is not over yet. If the EU is saying that the authorities in Angola have to address what the opposition is saying, it means that the race isn't over. So that's a very interesting take.
That was Israel Campos in Luanda speaking with VOA's Kate Pondawson just a short time ago. A new Human Rights Watch report says that in nearly one-third of African countries, teenage girls who become pregnant face significant legal and policy barriers to continuing their formal education. Mohamed Yusuf has more from VOA's Africa News Center in Nairobi.
Human Rights Watch said Tuesday it examined more than 100 laws and policies concerning education, gender equity, and reproductive health that are detrimental to the education of teenage mothers. Adi Radhakrishnan works with the rights group's Children's Rights Division. He says some African laws have pushed young mothers out of school.
It's shocking to understand how governments are undermining girls' education and effectively closing the door on girls' futures. These are students who are denied their basic right to education for reasons that have nothing to do with their desire or their ability to learn. They're not supported by the government.
Researchers found that at least 10 African countries have no legal means or measures to protect adolescent girls' education when they get pregnant or become mothers. Several countries, including Sudan, impose punishments on teenage girls who have sexual relationships outside marriage. For those girls, going to school while pregnant raises suspicion and exposes them to possible criminal prosecution. Hannibal Waifo is the head of the African Bar Association. He says cultural norms are mostly to blame for young mothers not continuing with their education.
The issue has to do with the families, the society and the community. I do not think there's any specific law that bars them from going back to school. I think that we need to deliberately encourage it in Africa, encouraging the girls to return back to school. We need to deliberately and actively campaign that this teenage pregnancy doesn't mean you should give up schooling or give up formal education. Otherwise, if there are any laws which are in place that says a teenage mother can't go back to school, we would like to know about them and we would like to work on them.
On the positive side, Radhakrishnan says 38 countries in Africa do have laws that protect the education of pregnant and young mothers.
Four more countries have positive frameworks than countries that lack them or have discriminatory measures. We're still seeing students excluded because teachers don't know or although the positive law exists or the parents don't know. But there are great lessons to be learned, and countries across Africa can draw the positive practices of their neighbors and develop useful guidelines that make sure that all girls, regardless of pregnancy or motherhood status, all girls are able to access education in Africa.
Human Rights Watch urges authorities in countries that lack such laws to create legal frameworks that affirms girls' right to education. The advocacy group also encourages countries that already have laws and policies to fully implement them so young mothers and their children can benefit. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
A diplomatic spat began with Morocco after Tunisian President Kais Saied met with the head of Polisario Front, Brahim Ghali, which demands independence for Western Sahara. Morocco recalled its ambassador to Tunis for consultations and pulled out of the Tokyo International Meeting for African Development Conference, TICAD, a pan-African investment conference that took place over the weekend in Tunis. In response, Tunisia said it will be recalling its ambassador to Rabat. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi discussed the rationale behind the spat with global affairs analyst and UN correspondent Ahmed Fati.
the cornerstone of Morocco's foreign policy is in relation to the Western Sahara issue. King Mohammed VI on August 20th delivered the speech, and he stated this fact very clearly. He said that Morocco's foreign policy is perceived through the lens of the country's position in relation to the Western Sahara. As far as Tunisia, Tunisia's actions with the TICAD is quite perplexing. Tunisia have never recognized Polisario. So Tunisia tried to portray the issue as it was a normal issue, and the Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic, so-called, is a member in the African Union. Nevertheless, the Japanese, who are the co-host of this forum, said that the presence of any entity which Japan does not recognize as a sovereign state at the TICAD, including senior officials meeting, does not affect the position of Japan regarding the status of this entity. They recognize Morocco's territorial integrity. They are in line with the United Nations resolution. So President Kais Saied is facing tremendous pressures domestically, in addition to the economic pressures due to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And he met last month with the Algerian President Tebboune. Algeria is the main provider of Tunisia's energy. And we think that there is a deal or pressures exercised by Algeria in that issue.
The other grouping, including the commander of the Polisario Front Movement, to attend the Tokyo International Meeting in Tunisia. And according to the announcement, Brahim Ghali, the leader of the Polisario, was also personally invited to the conference by the president of the African Commission. Why then Morocco was quick to a harsh decision?
I haven't seen the letter of invitation by the president of the African Union recognize the sovereignty of Morocco over the Western Sahara and open a consulate in Laayoune, the administrative capital of the region. Second, as far as the groupings are concerned, the African Union, although it's a co-organizer, but as per a note verbal issued by the mission of Japan to the African Union in Addis Ababa, that only delegations receiving an invitation co-signed between the president of Tunisia, Kais Saied, and the Japanese Prime Minister, Kishida Fumio, that they will be allowed to attend the meeting. In this case, maybe there was a general announcement by the African Union presidency, and this was not supported by the co-signed invitation.
African countries are divided on the Polisario and Western Sahara's independence, although the African Union still recognizes the area as a member of the Union. In 2020, the United States recognized Rabat's sovereignty over Western Sahara in return for Morocco's agreeing to normalize relations with Israel. Did that recognition impact African positions on the Western Sahara somehow?
No, not at all. If we go back to the history of the recognition the so-called Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic received among the African Union members, they entered the organization in 1984. At the height of their entry, they received about 84 recognitions from the member states of the United Nations. Now, in September 2021, till last year, there is about 40 countries only supporting the SADR. Many African countries withdrew their recognition. Currently, almost half of the AU recognize Moroccan sovereignty over the Western Sahara or the autonomy proposal. The consensus in many countries is that this autonomy proposal is serious, credible, and realistic, which was described by the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken last year during a visit by the Moroccan foreign minister.
That was global affairs analyst and UN correspondent Ahmed Fatih speaking with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Please note, we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There, you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. It's one of the many consequences of the war in Ukraine. The euro has slumped to its lowest level against the dollar since 2002. The euro's fall has consequences for Africa. 14 nations on the continent use the CFA franc, which is pegged to the euro. It also has fallen sharply, adding to the pain of households struggling with higher food prices. Rosie Pioth has this report from Brazzaville.
Pauline Tibakala has run a small restaurant outside her house for more than 20 years. Because of the fall of the CFA franc against the dollar, she's struggling to adapt to rising imported food prices. She says the market is like a jungle. She used to buy chicken hives at a good price. For example, the 15 kg box at 15,000 CFA. Today, it is at 18,000 CFA. Given the higher cost, she now serves smaller portions to her customers to be able to earn even a small profit. She says that she chose not to increase prices in her restaurant but to serve smaller portions instead so people can still buy something to eat. The Republic of Congo imports 75% of its foods, which is paid for in foreign currency. The weaker CFA franc makes imports more expensive. Paul Obambi is the president of the Brazzaville Chamber of Commerce. He thinks the fall of the CFA franc has some benefit for the economy. A weaker currency makes Congo exports cheaper, especially oil, which is the country's biggest export.
La baisse du dollar.
He says the fall in the dollar against the euro today has an impact that is quite positive for the country. Since the country lives on oil revenues, when the dollar is high, because oil is sold in dollars, it's an advantage. Obambi says it's an advantage in terms of state budget revenue, but hurts general consumption because many businesses operator import in dollars, so they are immediately affected. Given the rise in food prices, the Congolese government in April announced a support package for people and businesses affected by rising global prices, but it is yet to fully implement it. For VOA News, I'm Rosie Piot in Brazzaville.
At least 8 people are confirmed dead and several injured after torrential downpours caused mudslides and flooding in parts of Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown. Eric Kawa gives us more on the details.
Tragic images of flooding and a horrific mudslide. Not just homes, but roads, bridges, and other infrastructure were badly hit. This describes the scenes of Sunday, August 28th, in parts of Freetown. According to the Sierra Leone Meteorological Agency, more rains are expected over the next few days. The scenes recall August 14, 2017. That's when flash floods and a landslide with the regent area on the outskirts of Freetown being the hardest hit. 5 years after the tragedy, heavy downpours and a mudslide at Lookingtown, a community located on the hillside of Freetown neighborhood of Kisii, left 6 people dead and others injured. Videos show people trapped in the mud while others were rescued. Lookingtown was not the only area affected last weekend, so were Culvert, Mount Orel, Caningo, Dundas Street and Krube. The National Disaster Management Agency said at least 8 people, including 7-year-old, are confirmed dead, with rescue efforts still underway. Mohamed Lamran Abba is the Director of Communications at the agency.
We have trained our CDMCs, you know, that is the community-based volunteers, in all of those areas. So they are drawing our attention to inimical activities, for example, by certain people who are constructing houses where they should not construct houses. So we want to ensure that we stop, because the problem has been there for ages. The issue about urban planning, the issue about building codes and issuance of building permits and all of that, and people building beyond demarcated zones, has been there for the longest time.
Ba continues to explain that the entire community of Kolwat was inundated, forcing people to evacuate their homes, with the Ross Road police station serving as temporary accommodation. Benjamin Charles Spencer is one of the area's youth that helped in the rescue operation.
The water had reached to a certain point, we will not be able to save, say, we'll go inside
water. Water had reached a certain peak that we weren't able to get in. So we mobilized as young people and made a roadway on top of the roofs to evacuate residents. We're in dire need of medical attention. The rain affected and polluted the waters, and some people are sick due to the heavy winds. Everyone in the community needs medical attention. We need a drainage system in this community to help the proper flow of water.
They settle within the community, and the more they settle in the community.
Krobe is another hard-hit community with recurring floods every year. Augusta Savage, together with her husband and children, survived the disaster.
I wake from 4 o'clock.
It was not easy. I woke up at 4 a.m. local time, and it was raining heavily. I was continuously watching the sea level as they were rising. I woke my husband up, notifying him of the rising sea levels that might cause problems. A lady came by and advised me to evacuate the children, but I was afraid that they might get trapped in the flood.
She wants to be relocated, but doesn't have the upper hand, as she laments most houses are expensive and must be paid for with dollars. Pa Alimami Kathebe II is one of the chiefs in the Krobe community. He says relocation is not the best option now, as there are over 20,000 inhabitants in the area.
The shorter way of helping the people here is by embanking the waterway. This waterway is responsible for the circulation of the water in this community. The government knows this has been affecting the community.
Chief Alamami says the problem is that drainage systems were built in colonial days to control the flow of water, and no government has worked to maintain them. Scientists attribute the rains and flooding to climate change caused by human activity. Relief officials urge the international community to help fund African countries like Sierra Leone in their efforts to cope with the challenge. Eric Kawa reporting for VOA Africa.
In Madagascar, at least 19 people have died and 21 injured when police opened fire on a crowd that tried to storm a police station to attack suspected criminals. Reuters says the disturbance took place in the town of Ikongo, about 330 kilometers southeast of the capital Antananarivo. The incident began when a mob tried to reach four people accused of kidnapping an albino child and kidnapping his mother. The police say calm has been restored, and those who were killed in the shooting have been offered financial compensation. The child has not been found. In some parts of Africa, people with albinism, a congenital disorder leading to a lack of skin pigmentation, are killed for their body parts, which are believed to bring wealth and good luck. The UN says in sub-Saharan Africa, as many as 1 in 5,000 people have the condition. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest development on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.